Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. But first, Jim, you were saying yesterday about how you were encouraging people to give the really good stuff to your kids in terms of candy for Halloween. My daughter's only 15 months old, so, you know, we didn't go to a lot of houses. But as we were divvying up her candy amongst ourselves last night, she only got five things. And my wife says, "Do you want the Snickers while I have the Milky Way and the Twix?" And I'm thinking, man, percentage-wise, that's really, really good. I hope your guys did just as well.
Yeah, I agree. So the nice thing is that – so then Mrs. Campaign Spot goes to the office today and brings in what her coworkers hopefully will think is, oh, it's really nice of her. She brought a little bowl of candy to share, and it's all the stuff we didn't want. Okay? It's all – the nerds, the smarties, the little, all that kind of stuff. Anything that isn't good brand name stuff. Probably a few apples with razor blades and, you know, poison and all that kind of stuff. That's, you know, they're expendable. So we did pretty well. You could tell my little toddlers are like, I think I'm a little tired. I'm like, no, you need to get more candy. Do you understand me?
You're building their work ethic, Jim. It's important.
Exactly. This is the one night a year where it's okay to beg, you know.
That's right. I had one friend on Facebook today say, November 1st, the day we teach kids it's actually not okay to take candy from strangers.
There you go. Exactly. Yes.
But glad to hear everybody had a good time out there. All right. On to the good martini now. And Jim, this comes from today's Washington Post. And most people have seen that as Terry McAuliffe continues to lead in the race for governor, Democrats are happy to campaign with him. That includes Bill and Hillary Clinton. And from what I'm told, Barack Obama in the next couple days. But the Clintons, of course, are really focusing on 2016. And in their campaign speeches in favor of McAuliffe, Bill Clinton is out there saying, you know, people say that Terry McAuliffe's this wheeler dealer. Well, that's exactly what we need in Washington right now, because these two sides can't get together on anything, which is clearly a shot not only at Republicans, but also at the White House and Senate Democrats. Hillary has talked about middle of the road solutions. I believe she addressed the 10th anniversary of the Center for American Progress. And while we know Hillary doesn't believe any of this stuff and she's just trying to center herself in the middle, she's clearly going to be taking some pretty fun shots at the president while she lines up this strategy.
First of all, when Bill Clinton says the problem with Terry McAuliffe is that he's too much of a deal maker, no, that's not the criticism anybody's ever made. It's that he makes self-interested dealers, you know, crony capitalism deals. That's the complaint. The fact that he makes deals is not the actual criticism of theirs. I love to say, oh, that's the worst thing. No, it's not the worst thing they say about him, Mr. President. No, but I really was struck by the headline today. It's on an inside page, but the story starts on page one. It says, Clinton's new focus may be seen as criticizing Obama. And what I think this says is that although there's a lot of road ahead between now and November 2016, it's kind of hard to see a scenario in which by 2016, the mood of the country is dramatically different than it is right now. It's not like you're going to see a dramatic change in the party. Like, you know, it's hard to believe that, you know, partisan passions will go away in the next 3 years. I have a hard time seeing Obama and Boehner becoming best buddies. I suppose there's an outside shot of the Democrats getting the House and then, you know, Obama gets to pass everything he wants in his final 2 years. We don't know what's going to happen with the economy, but nothing really points to a giant economic surge of confidence and job creation and huge prosperity in the next couple of years, at least not in the near future. So you're probably going to end up in a circumstance in 2016 that's going to look kind of like what it is today. And there's a great deal of frustration in the country. The right track, wrong numbers are terrible. Most voters hate Washington, and it is very much a pox on both your houses. Now Hillary Clinton comes along and says, I am running on a compromise. You know, I am the one who's going to be, you know, all about getting, you know, compromise and not being so adamant and stubborn and all that stuff. Well, the first thing will be Hillary Clinton running against Washington is going to be really fascinating. That's the first thing. The second thing is that she's still going to have stuff like Benghazi and stuff like that. At this point, what difference does it make? So the idea of Hillary Clinton running as the outsider who's going to fix Washington is probably going to be a very tough message for her to sell. And with Bill Clinton there and all of that stuff, it's you know, so that's not going to work. Now, if you're a Republican governor like Chris Christie or Bobby Jindal, you might have an easier time saying, look, I'm not from Washington. I have nothing to do with those problems. And I'm the kind of guy who can go there and fix it. The reason this Post is running this story now and the reason people in the political class are noticing it is that I think this is the month. We're going to look back and say this was the month where the bottom fell out for the Obama administration. And it was two prongs. It was one, obviously, the terrible rollout of the website, and the website doesn't work, and here it is November 1st, and the website still stinks to high heaven. And then secondly, the obvious falsity of if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. Megan McArdle has a great column that kind of summarizes that a lot of health policy wonks look at that and say, well, obviously he's saying what he needs to say. This is obviously not really true, but this is a necessary bit of spin to get. You know, when most Americans hear, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan, what they understand it to mean as, if you like your plan, you can actually keep your plan. They don't see any asterisks. They don't understand it's a part of necessary political pandering or anything like that. So there are a lot of Americans who are going to feel really betrayed by this. And I think what we see in this story is that Hillary Clinton realizing that Barack Obama is going to be severely damaged goods by the time 2016 rolls around. And I think this past month he took a hit below the waterline, so to speak. And I think that this is the beginning of the lame duck period for Obama. And what's interesting is that, you know, the Democratic Party hasn't really put a lot of thought into what the party's identity is post-Obama. And the time for them to start confronting that is approaching very rapidly, I think.
On to martini number two now. And Jim, this is straight from the Washington Examiner, Paul Bedard. The Internal Revenue Service shared highly confidential tax information of several Tea Party groups in the IRS scandal with the Federal Election Commission, a clear violation of federal law, according to newly obtained emails. The public watchdog group Judicial Watch told Secrets, that's Bedard's column, Thursday that it was former scandal boss Lois Lerner who shared the information on groups including the American Future Fund and the American Issues Project. Jim, I think we're starting to see a little more into why she might have pled the fifth.
Occam's Razor says the simplest explanation is the most likely explanation. And when you have a, you know, very suspicious behavior going on the part of the IRS, and all of a sudden somebody clams up about what was going on, well, chances are what was going on was very, very bad and very, very scandalous and quite, you know, potentially very, very illegal. And lo and behold, it increasingly appears that was the case. You know, when you submit that stuff to the IRS, that's personal private information, and they're not supposed to be spreading it around to anybody they want in order to prove a political point. And it increasingly appears that's what happened in this case. Because we are now in the post-accountability administration, in which Kathleen Sebelius keeps her job, and the only person who gets fired for Obamacare is that, wasn't there one operator who talked to Sean Hannity?
Yes.
And told her how unpopular it was and how unhappy the people were and stuff, so they fired her. They got her, but otherwise nobody else loses their job. They did fire also the White House official who was tweeting about his coworkers anonymously, the national security wonk guy.
Yes.
So those two guys got fired, but everybody else keeps their job. And so as a result of that, Lois Lerner is probably going to escape serious accountability for this, unless you can find some sort of U.S. attorney who feels the need to make an example out of her. But if nothing else, it's nice to know that be vindicated to say, oh, all the administration excuses of this being an innocent mistake and, oh, the IRS targeted both sides and all that stuff. No, this was exactly what we thought it was, and it deserved every bit of public outrage that it got. It probably deserves even more public outrage, but unfortunately it appears probably Lois Lerner will not, unless ISA can really squeeze her somehow and get her to start testifying against other folks, chances are the scandal will not see the accountability that it has deserved since day one.
Jim, we know that the White House needs 7 million young, healthy people, or at least relatively young and mostly healthy people, to sign up on the exchanges to offset the cost incurred by adding millions and millions of people to Medicaid and millions and millions of older and not healthy people whose obviously their costs are going to be much higher. And the good news is they've on the first day of the exchanges, Jim, they got only 6. And after 2 days, they had less than 250. So the pace is a little bit behind schedule.
Remember, what was their explanation on the first couple of days? Have the data. We're not capable of collecting that data. Well, yes, you are. A FOIA request just proved it. It wasn't that you couldn't find that number. It's that it was a really little number, right? It's lower than the uniform number of Geno Smith, all right? I mean, the association with Mark Sanchez by itself would make people feel very ominous about the number 6. But that's why they, didn't want to put this out there, because it was a terrible, terrible number. I'm seeing somebody else noticing that. Do you remember the Kathleen Sebelius sketch that opened up Saturday Night Live last week, Greg?
Yes.
Do you remember what they said?
They only had capacity for 6 people at one time.
Yes, and it turns out they were right. Parody is actually pretty darn accurate, it turns out. Obviously, it's very embarrassing. Yes, they got up to like 250. Look, the fact that they knew this in the first couple of days means they've known every single friggin' day what the number is. And the fact that they're not telling us, suggest to us, that it's been a bad number every single day, and they're just hoping they can kick this can down the road until it's a number that looks respectable. You see numbers thrown around. Some people are estimating, 50,000 or something like that. One of the sites I really love, and I'll blurb it one more time today, is enrollmaven.com. And it's just one guy who just goes around, scans the news, and looks for any data in any report anywhere in the country. He only counts if you're enrolled in gold, silver, and bronze plans. The administration loves to count the web hits. They love to tout about the number of accounts created. No, what matters is how many people are buying insurance. And later on, we'll have a very big question of whether these people are young and healthy or whether they're old and sick. Well, right now, according to EnrollMaven, as we speak, Greg, it is at 36,294.
That's less than one day's worth if you want to be on pace, right?
The goal by the end of March was 7 million. So they are now at 0.5% of what they wanted to do. Now, they'll say, well, they still got 5 months, and they're going to have the whole thing fixed hunky-dory by December 1st. By the way, do you remember how it used to be end of November, Greg?
Yes.
And now, all of a sudden, it's turned into beginning of December. Like, somewhere along the line, the deadline got pushed back a few days when no one was paying attention. The other thing that's also kind of fascinating is how many liberals are walking around saying, well, it's going to be fixed by the beginning of December. It's going to be fixed, but, these are the same people who are totally convinced it will be ready by October 1st. It's faith-based at this point. The fact that they have six people on the first day, 200-some, suggests that it must be a really lousy number. At some point, my guess is like on Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I think the administration will put out the number. It'll be really terrible, but nobody will be paying attention because they're watching the Thanksgiving Day parade and the Detroit Lions lose on Thanksgiving Day and stuff like that. So, but, at some point, the numbers have to come out, and they're going to be really crappy, and it's going to indicate that they have built a system that doesn't work, both in terms of the website and, in fact, the entire new way of purchasing health insurance as a whole. And it's bad. People don't like the deals. They're going to have sticker shock. And this has been a catastrophic disaster from beginning to end. And, I'm trying to get the name Debacle Care to stick to it, Greg.
Jim, I'm just trying to wrap my mind around this. Does this suggest that when Sebelius and others say they just don't know, that they were being deceptive in some way? I find that so hard to believe.
Think about this. The site never crashed. Right? The other statement I just noticed I have over on Campaign Spot is insurers aren't dropping consumers. They're improving their coverage options. This is news to everybody who's getting the cancellation. And now, finally, we don't have the numbers. They're just lying, Greg. I like to paraphrase Daniel Hannan. You're lying. We know that you're lying. And you know that we know that you're lying. And they do it anyway. So it's an astoundingly cynical administration that I think is now flailing in desperation in a spot they never thought they were going to be.
Well, the good news, if we go all the way back to the beginning, is that perhaps this is the beginning of the lame duck. We'll find out in due time. But if that is true, then at least there's that. Happy weekend, everyone.
Yes, happy weekend, everybody.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We'll be back on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.